Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal. We will be reading a combination today of Saturday's paper from Saturday, November 25th, and Sunday, November 26th. Today we'll start with the mini editorial, which is on Saturday's paper, and it is written by Andy Phillips of Hornick, Iowa. And Andy writes, "All the tailors need to go, one to jail and one, well, just go." Again, this was from Andy Phillips from Hornick. Now we'll move to the weather forecast for the next 5 days, beginning with today. And today will be partly sunny and windy with a high of 36 and a low of 14. Monday will be mostly sunny with a high of 38 and a low of 17. Tuesday will be sunshine and a few clouds with a high of 44 and a low of 23. Wednesday will be mostly sunny and mild with a high of 51 and a low of 24. And Thursday will be a time of clouds and sun with a high of 45 and a low of 21. We'll now move to the front page stories from Saturday, November 25th. And the first headline is "A Family Owned and Operated Business." And this is about Grow Fin Aquatics. Not all fish are created equal. The fish at Grow Fin Aquatics, a shop located, appropriately enough, on Water Street, have had their needs carefully attended to, said proprietor Doug Iyer. Some of the tank dwellers are born and raised right in Sioux City. Iyer said, "They're pretty much the healthiest fish and aquatic plants you can find." He opened the store at 623 Water Street last December, so almost a year ago. "The difference between our store and what you would normally be able to find at like a corporate box store is night and day. Every species that comes through our door goes through a rigorous quarantine and medication process that exceeds anything found in the industry. Fish don't make it out onto my sales floor until they are healthy and ready to go, and that is just not something that you find at pretty much any other store." Grow Fin Aquatics, and that is spelled G-R-O-F-I-N Aquatics, which also sells aquarium supplies and offers installation and maintenance services, is angling for a robust holiday shopping season. Aside from the increased foot traffic Christmas normally brings, the cooler months are a good time of the year to be in the indoor hobby business. Iyer decided on the spur to offer a special for Small Business Saturday, $5 aquarium plants. "When we first opened up in December last year, the community was great for us. It really made Christmas for us last year," said Iyer, who is a double small businessman. He also runs the Thornside Tattoo and Piercing Parlor in Morningside. He began fish keeping as a hobby, but when COVID hit, he had to stay home and needed an income boost, so he decided to get into the aquarium business. "It is a family-owned and operated business," Iyer said. "It's just me and my wife and my kids and my little cousin and my brother." Iyer's emporium of aquarium supplies and fish is one of more than 20 small businesses taking part in the 6th annual Small Business Bingo, organized by the Sioux City Organization Downtown Partners. Shoppers bring the bingo card to the stores listed on the card. A completed bingo card entitles the holder to enter a drawing for a grand prize basket valued at over $250 or one of three smaller prize baskets. The bingo cards can be filled out through December 19th. Bingo cards can be found at participating businesses. Keith and Lux, a boutique of baby and maternity wares inside the sonography studio at 924 4th Street, Suite 922, is preparing for its first ever holiday shopping season. The Sonography Studio and Keith and Lux reopened in their new space a few weeks ago. "If a grandma just had a grandchild born 6 months ago, she can still come in and get a Christmas present for that little one," said proprietor Lily Frank. And then Corey Smith, owner of Albrecht Cycle at 205th Street, said the 99-year-old bicycle retailer and repair shop isn't planning any blowout Small Business Saturday discounts. They've had sales going all year. "Bicycles tend to sell better in the spring and summer than in November and December. Historically, Small Business Saturday and Black Friday has not necessarily been a real big thing for us, Smith said. Instead of yet more price cuts, for the past couple months, Albrecht has been engaging its customers by taking them on Wednesday bicycle rides on the city trails, like the new one at Cone Park. Smith said, this year has been quite different because it was kind of like the COVID backlash last year. So we've now got plenty of product that has been on sale for the entire year. So instead of having that be an event, we're doing kind of little end-of-the-month specials, like little extra recommended items. Small Business Saturday came to existence in 2010 as an answer to Black Friday, which is dominated by major big-box retailers. Black Friday itself has since morphed into a sometimes chaotic in-store one-day affair into an increasingly online weeks-long event. Nationwide, consumers are estimated to spend around $184 billion at small businesses during Small Business Saturday, according to the United States Chamber of Commerce. Small Business Saturday bingo cards can be filled out through December 19th. Bingo cards can be found at participating businesses. The following stores are listed on the bingo cards: Studio 427 at 316 Court Street, Red Valley Natural Foods, 600 Water Street, Head Rush Salon, 611 Pearl Street, Albrecht Cycle, 205th Street, Three Rivers Art Gallery at 604th Street, A Cut Above, 505 5th Street, Coffee and Purrs, 500 Nebraska, Hardline Coffee, 515 4th Street, Art Sucks, 515 4th, Expansion Center at 1119 4th Street, Heart and Soul Treasures Flea Market, 1100 Dace Avenue, Games King, 823 Gordon Drive, Mod House Interiors, 255 5th Street, Daily Downtown Energy and Nutrition at 508 Nebraska, Siouxland Coins and Jewelry at 419 Nebraska, Grofin Aquatics, 623 Water Street, Gallery 103 at 604th Street, Best Day Ever Nutrition for You, 425th Street, Home Furniture at 415 4th Street, Small Business Marketplace at 1016 4th Street, Keith and Lex and the Sonography Studio at 924 4th Street, and Patricia's Imports at 407 Pearl Street. The next headline from Saturday's paper, Taylor urged to step down. Three GOP board members call for his resignation after wife's conviction. Three Woodbury County supervisors are calling on fellow Republican Jeremy Taylor to resign from the board in the wake of his wife's conviction this week for voter fraud. The Woodbury County Democratic Party has also urged the all-GOP board to move on from Jeremy Taylor's serial dramas. On Tuesday, a federal jury convicted Taylor's wife, Kim, of 52 counts of voter fraud that government prosecutors say was part of a scheme to stuff the ballot box for her husband, who ran unsuccessfully for the Republican nomination for a U.S. House seat in the 2020 primary before winning election to the Board of Supervisors that fall. Jeremy Taylor released a brief statement following the verdict and after he presided over the county board as vice chairman on Tuesday night. While this was certainly not the outcome we were hoping for, we respect our court system that allowed the jury to hear my wife's side of the story. We are thankful for our friends, family, and community who know us best and have stood by our side, Taylor's statement said. While in Tuesday's meeting I tried to make the best decisions I could for our county's families, my first priority right now is to deal with today's results in order to be there for my own family, my wife, and our children. So far, the five-member board as a whole has not released a public statement, but three of the four members, Matthew Ung, Mark Nelson, and Dan Bittinger, contacted by the Journal, called on him to voluntarily step aside. The fifth member, Keith Raddick, declined to comment. Ung, the board chairman, said while the board could vote to remove Taylor from his role as vice chair, there are only approximately five meetings until the board votes for new leadership in 2024. Ung said, I hate this situation. I hate the situation that I'm put in, that the board's put in. But this is what putting principles over politics looks like. It's asking someone that you've served with, done good things with for 9 years, to resign when things just truly get out of hand. The thing that has everyone in the community confused and upset is who is taking the fall here. My heart goes out to Kim. My heart goes out to their kids. For instance, there was never a time in my campaigns where I did not know what my wife was doing to help my campaign. It is just simply not something you lose track of. Bittinger said elected officials have a duty to the citizens to uphold the law and the Constitution while holding each other accountable. Bittinger said, in my opinion, any elected official of either political party that would be found in this specific situation should resign due to this compromising position. Nelson also said those in public offices are expected to have a high level of integrity and responsibility. He said, at a time when so many are questioning the validity of their vote, this type of conduct only deepens the very real concerns amongst our countrymen, he said. Well, I'm deeply disturbed at the actions that have been perpetrated right here in Woodbury County. The future of Mr. Taylor's public service rests squarely with the voters of Woodbury County. The Woodbury County Democrats Executive Committee also called for Taylor to step down. The county party said in a statement, "The Taylor's actions were a cynical bid to manipulate a vulnerable population in ways that benefited themselves. For the good of his family and for the good of the county, we call on Mr. Taylor to resign. We urge the supervisors to move on from Jeremy Taylor's serial dramas." Woodbury County Republican Party Chair Bob Henderson said they would not comment on the situation as it goes beyond the scope of the organization. Henderson said the organization is intended to seek candidates for elected offices and support candidates in the election. He said beyond that, they have no place in commenting or determining what an elected official does. For us to comment, that would be inappropriate, Henderson said, who is also a state legislator from Sioux City. In Iowa, a county elected official can only be removed by a petition filed by the county attorney. Taylor's term runs through 2024. Kim Taylor was convicted Tuesday of 26 counts of providing false information in registering and voting, 23 counts of fraudulent voting, and 3 counts of fraudulent registration. Throughout the 6-day trial, prosecutors said that in 2020, Taylor, who was born in Vietnam, made contact with a number of Vietnamese voters with limited English language comprehension and filled out and signed voting forms and ballots for them and their English-speaking children in an attempt to stuff the ballot box for her husband. Prosecutors identified Jeremy Taylor as an unindicted co-conspirator in his wife's trial, but he has not been charged himself. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ron Timmons, who was one of 3 prosecutors to present the federal government's case against Kim Taylor, declined to comment on any potential future indictments. The case is still under investigation. Taylor, the county supervisor from District 5, previously represented District 2, winning 2 4-year terms, but he was forced to give up that seat in January 2020 after a local voter challenged his residency in the district. After weighing testimony and evidence in the case, Woodbury County Auditor Pat Gill revoked Taylor's voter registration, ruling his primary residence was a home outside the district on Christie Road rather than a home on Grandview Boulevard where Taylor claimed he lived. After Taylor lost his bid in 2020 for the Republican nomination for the Iowa 4th Congressional District in June primary voting, he was selected in August by a special Republican county panel to be the county party's nominee for District 3 supervisor. The Republican unseated Democratic incumbent Marty Potterbaum by nearly 5,000 votes in the November general election. And our third story from the Saturday's front page is missing trucker's wife pleads for help. Semi found in Sac County, but search continues for the driver. Wall Lake, Iowa. Sarah Schultz described her husband David as an extremely hard worker who is passionate about livestock and his family. The couple have 10-year-old twin boys. Schultz said by phone Friday afternoon, "He works and he comes home and that's it." The 53-year-old Wall Lake man who went missing earlier this year under mysterious circumstances. She also said, "This is suspicious. Something's wrong. This is not something David would do. He would never leave. His family is his life." David Schultz was last heard from in the early morning hours of Tuesday, according to the Lakeview Police Department. The department and the Sac County Sheriff's Office began an investigation into Schultz's whereabouts Tuesday afternoon. Several law enforcement agencies, local fire departments, and volunteers conducted a search for Schultz on Wednesday, the Sheriff's Office said in a statement. Sarah Schultz last saw her husband at about 7:30 p.m. Monday. She said David, who hauls livestock for a living, had been working all day and asked her to grab him a change of clothes. She said he had to do another seaboard load from Eagle Grove to Sac City. He just washed up and changed and gave me a kiss and ran out the door. He's always in a hurry. Schultz said David was eager to get his work done and come back home, since his daughter and grandson were visiting from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. However, on Tuesday morning, Schultz found the man whom David hauls livestock on her doorstep. David was supposed to transport a load of baby pigs from Eagle Grove to Sac City, but they never arrived. He said, "Have you spoken to Dave?" Schultz recalled, and I said, "No." He said, "No one can get a hold of him, and the pigs have not been dropped off yet." Schultz repeatedly called her husband's cell phone every few minutes, but those calls went to his voicemail. She said her husband is an owner-operator, meaning he owns his truck and rents the trailer. His family is his life. Hauling livestock is his life, she said. Tuesday afternoon, David's truck was found northeast of Sac City, parked on northbound Highway 71, about 5 miles north of the old Highway 20 intersection. Schultz said the vehicle was turned off, but it was not pulled over to the side of the road. The trailer was still loaded with baby pigs. "My husband would never do that," she said. "It had been parked there, I'm guessing, for about 12 hours from 3:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. People drove around it all day, a big red truck, and did not turn it in." She said David's cell phone and wallet, which contained money, were found in the truck. The truck was pointing in the wrong direction from where David was headed, north rather than south, according to Schultz. There was no sign of David, but his coat was located in a ditch on the opposite side of the road. "My husband is a truck driver. If he would have come across that, he would have called. No, he would have been mad. Why would someone park like that? It's dangerous," Schultz said. "He has such a work ethic and pride in what he does. He would never park like that. So it has been wondering, was he even driving the truck?" Schultz said law enforcement have searched the area where the truck was found. But as of Friday afternoon, she said they were just beginning their investigation in Eagle Grove, where her husband loaded the pigs and was last seen. The people he loaded the hogs for, the owner, didn't know anything about it until today. The neighboring farm didn't know anything about it until today. "People in that area have done nothing to look for him," she said. "The Lakeview police have told me they were going to go today, which they just got there this afternoon to talk to people in that area." Schultz said that the United Cajun Navy, a nonprofit organization that organizes search and rescue teams during natural disasters, has offered their services. She said she has been in contact with Jake Raleigh, the organization's Midwest team leader, who is organizing a search of the route her husband's truck may have traveled. "He's getting flyers made and starting a search," she said of Raleigh. "They're not going to give up. I feel like this is above the local police at this point. I feel like someone else should jump in and take charge. I think the police are doing what they can. It's just not enough." According to a statement from the Sac County Sheriff's Office, Northeast Sac County property owners are being asked to check their properties and outbuildings for anything out of the ordinary. "If anything is out of the ordinary, please do not disturb the immediate vicinity and let items remain in place before contacting the Sac County Communications Center at 712-662-7127," the statement said. The Lakeview Police Department has asked anyone who has seen or heard from Schultz to contact them at 712-657-2513. Schultz said, "Thank you for those who have reached out and are sending prayers and concerns, helping financially and bringing goods. I would have never expected this. It's overwhelming," Schultz said. "If you can help search, please do. If you know something, call the Lakeview Police Department." And then now we move to the Sunday's front page. And the first story on the Sunday's front page is Northwestern outlasts Dort. Red Raiders advance to fourth straight NAIA quarterfinals. The second round NAIA playoff game between Northwestern College football team and Dort University was drastically different compared to the first time the two sides played the season, but it produced the same winner. Top-seeded Northwestern, the defending NAIA champions, ran its winning streak to 25 games as the Red Raiders edged the 16th-seeded defenders on Corver Field at DeVallos Stadium in Orange City on Saturday. It was a battle, Northwestern eighth-year head coach Matt McCarty said. The familiarity played a factor. The defense always has an advantage when you see a team twice. The poise of this group is really special. They believe they will find a way to win. Northwestern advances to the national quarterfinals for the fourth season in a row. The Red Raiders will be home again next Saturday for the quarterfinals against St. Xavier, Illinois. A 12-yard scoring pass from Northwestern quarterback Jalen Gramstead to Connor McQuillan at an Eli Stater point after with 5 minutes 38 seconds left in the first quarter stood as the only point scored all game. In the first matchup between the two teams, Northwestern beat Dort by a 35-14 final. Dort head coach Joel Penner said, "I love them. I'm proud of them. We fought and played a very good opponent today down to the wire." When you're building a program, you want it to happen all at once. But there's a quote I try to live by that says, it's not about who's the toughest. It's about who's the toughest the longest. And I think that's what I see in our team as we continue to build and grow. It was the smallest margin of victory ever for the Red Raiders in the series. And just so the second time, the game was decided by less than 10 points. Coach Penner and I had offices next to each other when both were assistants at Northwestern, McCarty said of his counterpart at Dort. And I helped him move in and out of his house. We battled against each other at practice every single day. He's done a really great job there at Dort. Saturday was a defensive battle between the Great Plains Athletic Conference members, one that saw the Red Raiders make plays when they needed, even while getting outgained by the defenders in total yardage. A lot of guys weren't so pleased offensively, McQuillan said. But after the game, Coach McCarty reminded us that it's a team game and no one side wins it. It's everyone all together. So to see the defense step up and make stops when it mattered and force turnovers, seeing that and trying to feed off of that helped us hang out and advance. We're on to the next round of the playoffs, and whether it's a 3-0, 7-0, or 50-0, moving on is a blessing. The defenders' best chance to tie came early in the fourth quarter, but the Northwestern defense stood its ground even as Dort ran 7 plays inside the 20-yard line and 5 inside the 10. The drive ultimately ended on a turnover on downs as a run by Nick Whelan from the Red Raider 1-yard line on fourth down ended in a 2-yard loss with 9:09 remaining in the game. Our defense was really resilient, said junior all-GPAC defensive back Cody Moser, a Rock Valley High School alum who had 2 tackles and a pass breakup. We played together and we were physical. We bent a few times but never broke. And it was just great to see this whole team come together and figure out a way to win. Northwestern also recovered a pair of Dort fumbles. McCollum said, having a defense like we do allows us to be who we are. Early on, we were scoring a lot more, but it doesn't matter anymore. What we did do or should do is what we're going to do. And we have the mindset that we're going to take care of business by doing whatever it takes. Even though Dort converted half of its 18 third downs, the defenders were 0 of 4 on fourth down tries and 0 of 2 in the red zone. Gramstead, a junior West Lyon alum who was named GPAC Player of the Year, completed 8 of 15 passing attempts for 78 yards plus 17 rushing yards. Although held to a single catch, senior wide receiver Michael Story became Northwestern's all-time leader in career catches with 283. McQuillan, a junior all-GPAC running back, ran for 60 yards on 11 totes and caught 4 passes for 18 yards. Sophomore tight end Peyton Carroll caught 2 passes for 46 yards. Carroll's first catch was a big one that went for 42 yards and a first down as Northwestern faced 3rd and 14 from midfield. The game's only touchdown came 3 plays later. Dort sophomore quarterback Colson Cruz was 5 of 14 passing for 79 yards in the cold, windy, and snowy conditions. Cruz also rushed 15 times for 68 yards, and the senior Willen carried the ball 16 times for a game-high 71 yards. Though it marked the end of the season for Dort, it was a campaign that saw the defenders win their first playoff game and beat Morningside for the first time in program history. "Our seniors left a legacy," Penner said. "Eventually, I believe we have a champion in the making here at Dort. We love playing these games. When we found out we were playing Northwestern, we were ecstatic. We are a team playing for a bigger purpose. We played a more efficient style of football. We're only set to lose one of two starters on offense. Four or five starters will graduate out of all 22 starters. The Dort defenders will be back stronger than ever. But today, I'm just focused on honoring our seniors. They did things here that are the stuff of legends." The Festival of Trees hosts live auction in Sioux City. The Festival of Trees is celebrating its 30th anniversary with a live auction on November 30th. The event began in 1993 as a community fundraising project of the Sioux City JCs until the chapter folded in 2008. Since then, it has been run by a committee led by Rosie Strunk and Dr. Tom Molstead. Each year, a local nonprofit organization is chosen to be the recipient of the auction proceeds. The festival has raised over $450,000. This year marks three decades of celebration since Festival of Trees was not held in 2020 due to COVID. The current local nonprofit for this anniversary year is Support Siouxland Soldiers. The live auction will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the highest confirmed silent bid on each item. Silent bids will be taken until November 29th. Proceeds of this year's auction will benefit Support Siouxland Soldiers. In addition to the auction items, a giving tree has tags for items that Support Siouxland Soldiers will be able to distribute, such as children's toys, socks for veterans, mittens, gloves, hats, and gift cards. Items should be returned to Ho-Chunk Center by November 30th. On November 20th, the organizers recognize businesses and groups who have been involved with the project for 20 years or more. The business sponsors are Ho-Chunk Center, the Sioux City Journal, Sign Pro, Brock Auction, Clace Brothers Moving and Storage. Tree sponsors with over 20 years are the Cole family, the Carlson family, North High School Student Council, East High School Student Council, West High School Student Council, Winnevegas Casino and Resort, Siouxland Professional Women in Building, Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, Siouxland Samplers Quilt Guild, Northern Hills Retirement Community, Opportunities Unlimited, and Unity Point Health St. Luke's. For more information, please contact Dr. Tom Molstead at 712-276-7742. Woman settles malpractice lawsuit against Sioux City Law Firm. A Sergeant Bluff woman who said a Sioux City Law Firm's actions handling her lawsuit were negligent has settled a malpractice lawsuit against the firm and her former lawyers. Jessica McHugh's attorney, Timothy Claussen, has filed a dismissal of the lawsuit against Guzman Law Firm, Joel Carney, William Hill, and Gianna Guzman. Claussen said details of the settlement are confidential and he was unable to comment on it. McHugh sued the firm and the lawyers in August 2022 in Woodbury County District Court, saying her lawsuit against a plastic surgeon was dismissed after her lawyers missed a filing deadline. She said in the lawsuit that Guzman Law Firm had exaggerated its claims about its lawyers' health care law experience, and her lawyers had breached their duties by filing an affidavit more than 4 months past its due date. The missed deadline resulted in the dismissal of McHugh's lawsuit against the doctor. The firm and the lawyer said in their answer to the lawsuit they had acted in good faith and believed they were complying with the law while representing her. McHugh had been seeking a judgment awarding her an unspecified amount of damages for past and future medical expenses, lost wages, pain and suffering, permanent disfigurement, and legal fees. Man charged in stabbing gets probation. A Sioux City man who was found guilty of assault in connection with a fatal stabbing was sentenced Tuesday to probation. District Judge Jeffrey Neary gave Nathaniel Parker III credit for 221 days served in jail while awaiting trial and suspended a one-year jail sentence on a charge of assault causing bodily injury. Neary sentenced him to 30 days in jail on a related drug possession charge and credited Parker for time served. Parker was placed on probation for 1 year. Parker, 31, was initially charged with first-degree murder for the February 24th death of William Harlan, Jr., who was fatally stabbed in the backseat of a car in which Parker was riding. A jury on November 7th found Parker guilty of the lesser assault charge, a serious misdemeanor that carries a 1-year jail sentence. Harlan, 48, of Sioux City, was found suffering from multiple stab wounds in an apartment at 414 11th Street and died later at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. He was stabbed 5 times, 3 times in the chest and once in each arm. One of the stab wounds punctured his left lung and severed his aorta. Harlan had gotten in a car with 4 men at a convenience store, and 16 minutes later, Parker was seen pulling Harlan out of the car and onto the ground at the apartment building before carrying him inside. He was later found hiding in a bathroom in the apartment, and a bloody knife was found wrapped in a shirt above the ceiling tiles. He was arrested and found in possession of a small quantity of meth. He pleaded guilty to the drug charge prior to the murder trial. Parker testified in his own defense that the stabbing occurred in the car, but denied doing it himself. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal with the combined Saturday and Sunday papers for November 25th and November 26th. I will now turn to today's obituaries. Doris M. Sujens, 89, of Kingsley, and the last name is spelled Seuntjens. She passed away Tuesday, November 21st at Happy Siesta Health Care Center in Remsen. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, November 25th, so they were yesterday, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Remsen. Burial will be at the St. Michael's Catholic Cemetery in Kingsley. Doris was born April 20th, 1934 in Remsen, the daughter of Nick and Catherine Ruba. She grew up in the Remsen area, graduating from Remsen St. Mary's Catholic High School in 1952. Doris and Bob Sujens were united in marriage February 11th, 1958 at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Following their marriage, Doris and Bob lived on a farm east of Kingsley where they raised their family and farmed. Bob passed away February 22, 2018, after which Doris continued to live at her home in Kingsley. Larry D. DeMaglinon, and that is last name is spelled DeMaglinon, 78, a longtime resident of Sioux City, died November 15th. A memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Monday, November 27th at Christy Smith Funeral Homes, with visitation 1 hour prior. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. James P. Jimmy Blanchard, 55, of Oldeboat, died October 26th. Celebration of life will be at 7 p.m. Thursday, November 30th at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, visitation for 2 hours prior. Kathy Sue Berg, 76, of North Sioux City, South Dakota, passed away November 22nd at a local care center. A memorial service will be held at 4 p.m. Sunday, November 26th at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Mary E. Lemick, 88, of Avon, Ohio, and formerly of Reedfield, Maine, the beloved wife of the late Raymond E. Lemick, loving mother of Carrie and Peggy, cherished gram of Colin, and dear sister of Catherine, Ginny, Ted, and Chris, passed away on Thursday, November 16th. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, December 1st at St. Bernadette Church, 2256 Clegg Road in Westlake, Ohio. Memorial contributions may be forwarded to the Mount Vernon Food Bank, 321 Pond Road, Mount Vernon, Maine, 04352. Joseph M. Kudera, 49, of Sioux City, died Monday, November 13th, and that last name is spelled Kudera. A gravesite service will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, November 28th at Memorial Park Cemetery. Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside Chapel, is assisting the family with arrangements. Carol D. Cassens, 93 of Anthon, passed away Saturday, November 18th, surrounded by her loving family. Per Carol's wishes, cremation has taken place and a private family service will be held at a later date. The Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home of Anthem is in charge of the arrangements. Jeffrey Paul Wise, 59, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away November 15th at a local care center. Services will be held 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 2nd at the United Methodist Church in Sergeant Bluff. Visitation will be 1 hour prior at the church. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery in Storm Lake. Arrangements by Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Gloria Jean Meyer, 79, of Danbury, passed away Monday, November 20th. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, November 27th at the St. Mary's Catholic Church in Danbury. Visitation will be held 3 to 5 p.m., rosary at 4:45 p.m., vigil service at 5 p.m. on Sunday, November 26th at the St. Mary's Catholic Church in Danbury. The Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home of Mapleton is in charge of arrangements. Joyce Needham Barnes, 89, of Sioux City, passed away peacefully on November 22nd. A private family burial will be followed by visitation from 3 to 4 p.m. and scripture service at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 28th at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel of Sioux City. Joyce's early years were in Elburn, Illinois, one of six children of the late Lloyd Needham, a packing industry pioneer, and his wife Edna Johnson Needham. Her family relocated often across the Midwest, and she spent her high school years in Glenwood, Iowa. She graduated from the University of Iowa, where she met her husband of over six decades, the late Dr. Wayne Barnes of Washington, Iowa. Prior to Joyce's major life's work, motherhood, she enjoyed her occupational therapy career in Florida. In 1960, Joyce and Wayne moved to Sioux City. She raised seven children while pursuing multiple creative, charitable, and civic endeavors. Joyce was Wayne's wind beneath his wings and dedicated her life to inspiring and supporting her family's many passions. She excelled at teaching her kids the art of living, all the while creating a home of warmth, laughter, and love. She gleaned her children to be her most important and fulfilling assets. With seven children teasing who was the favorite, she tenderly teased each one, depending on the day of the week. Her legacy of inherent family values will flourish in her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Joyce was the pillar, the mastermind, the memory maker. Joyce found balance in her active family life through her creativity and social nature. She established two businesses, one that enabled her to create and sell soft sculptures, and the other, corporate gift buying. She loved entertaining and for decades orchestrated decor, culinary, and holiday events for family and friends. She and Wayne traveled extensively in the United States as well as internationally. Joyce was preceded in death in 2020 by her husband, Wayne. The Barnes family would like to express their appreciation to the caring staff of Stony Brook Suites and Hospice of Siouxland Palliative Care Program. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Carmelite Nuns of Sioux City. In the circle of life, accepting our loving mother into his kingdom, we find comfort that our parents are together again. And that is all the obituaries for today. And we'll now move to the opinion page, and we'll begin with the Sioux City Journal editorial board opinion. Headline is Support Small Businesses Saturday and All Year. It is not an exaggeration to say small businesses represent the backbone of the American economy. Over half of U.S. workers own or work for small businesses, which have generated 64% of all new jobs in the last 15 years, according to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. In addition to contributing a substantial payroll for local economies, small businesses give back to their communities, giving generously to local causes that range from food drives to youth sports teams. Over 75% of small business owners donate an average of 6% of their profits to charitable organizations. This holiday season, we encourage everyone to acknowledge those contributions by doing at least a portion of your shopping at a local mom-and-pop shop, restaurant, or service providers. In a story today, Journal reporter Mason Doctor features a few of the local merchants who will be participating in the annual Small Business Saturday. Nestled between Black Friday and Cyber Monday, the campaign was launched by American Express in 2010 to help smaller businesses capture a share of consumer holiday spending, whether in-store or online. The campaign, which now lasts throughout the holiday shopping season, is observed in all 50 states. In 2011, the Senate passed a resolution recognizing Small Business Saturday. By all accounts, the designation has made a major impact on small businesses' bottom line. In 2022, an estimated $17.9 billion was spent by U.S. consumers with small businesses the last Saturday of November, according to the Small Business Saturday Consumer Insight Survey commissioned by American Express. Small businesses in downtown Sioux City are giving shoppers an added incentive to shop small. For the sixth straight year, they can take part in Small Business Bingo, organized by the Sioux City organization Downtown Partners. As Mason Doctor reports, shoppers bring the bingo card to the retailers listed on the card. A completed bingo card entitles the holder to enter a drawing for a grand prize basket or one of three smaller prize baskets. The cards, which can be found at participating businesses, can be filled out through December 19th. One more reason to support small businesses who mean so much to our community. And again, this was an opinion piece from the Sioux City Journal editorial board. We now have some letters to the editor, and we'll begin with one from Greg Nooney of Sioux City. And Greg writes, Governor Reynolds wants to use the $1.83 billion budget surplus and the $2.74 billion tax relief fund to eliminate the state income tax. Prior to doing so, how about fully funding her mental health bill and providing some help for struggling Iowans? She could start by increasing the child tax credit, paying our teachers more, and buying more tiny homes for the unhoused. Again, this was written by Greg Nooney of Sioux City. And our next letter is written by Jerry J. Cobbs of Sergeant Bluff. And Jerry writes, Every day, Trump lays out in vivid detail how he is going to turn the presidency into a full-blown dictatorship by jailing political foes, shutting down journalists and media, executing generals, deporting anyone he does not like, implementing martial law on day one. At every rally, he lavishes praise and adoration on the dictators and butchers of the world, and yet his poll numbers remain high. Be careful what you wish for, people. People who refuse to defend our precious democracy do not deserve the privilege of living under it. Again, this was a letter written by Jerry J. Cobbs of Sergeant Bluff. And then our next letter is written by Donald C. Parsons of Sioux City. And Donald writes, When I was in college, there was a song that played on the radio called Stuck in the Middle. The lyrics went, Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you. I thought it was an anti-drug use song, but now I'm not so sure. In the Journal's opinion page on November 18th, Bruce Lear wrote a column of chaos on the job and moves on to address a political chaos in this country. He starts with the acknowledgement that we have clowns and jokers, then veers into discussing only the jokers on the right. In fairness, let's discuss the clowns on the left. Bill Mayer describes the anti-Semitism in the Democratic Party as equivalent to the racism of the Ku Klux Klan. These anti-Semites are unapologetic. The Labour Party in the United Kingdom has become so anti-Semitic that the only elections that it can win are those in Muslim voting districts. Apparently now, the chaos has gotten into the races for school boards. Apparently, some of those running for school boards are concerned that their children and grandchildren can and are being exposed to pornography that is considered meaningful and educational by those on the left, and pandering and disgusting to those on the right. To make matters worse, our students are taught that the father of our country and the composer of the Declaration of Independence, who lived 250 years ago, were bigoted racists. I would like to ask, do we just sit back and wait to see if our school boards make the decision that our children need to be taught that there is no Santa Claus, or even that there is no God? The answer is no. Vote your conscience and for your beliefs. Then maybe someday those of us who are stuck in the middle will again be the ones running this country and the school boards. Again, this was a letter written by Donald C. Parsons of Sioux City. We now move to one of the Journal Sunday regulars, or Saturday, I should say now. And this week it is an article written by Steve Warnstead. And he is a Sioux City resident and is the Government Affairs Coordinator for Western Iowa Tech Community College and is a former Democratic State Senator. He and his wife Mary are the parents of one son and one daughter. And so today he writes, "This time of year is a time of both reflection and creating resolutions going forward. I believe there are examples of things for which we should be grateful and things about which should cause concern. Our area had the good fortune to have many individuals seek local elected office this fall. In Sioux City, there were city council and school board races with multiple candidates. In addition to the number of candidates, the ballot reflected the diversity of the community philosophically, politically, racially, ethnically, and religiously. Those seeking office appeared to have solid motivations. They sought to improve the community and ensure accountability. The positions they sought require more time than most citizens are aware of and provide little or no pay. The offices are challenging, often involving emotionally charged issues. We were fortunate to have many choices of quality people. I appreciate all those who put themselves out for public review. Our local candidates ran on issues they believe impacted the community. They had disagreements on those issues. Some had endorsements from local organizations while others did not. Despite significant differences, the candidates conducted their campaigns on issues or the unique attributes they offered to the community. This was not the case everywhere in Iowa, where local elections were nationalized and often very expensive. I saw the spirit of public service at a reception for members of Sioux City's boards and commissions. I was recently appointed to the Gillian Sister City Committee. It was encouraging to see so many people who volunteer in different ways to make the community a better place to live. I was glad to see city leaders take the time to recognize the collective time these citizens contribute. These commissions are ways for any person to make a difference. There are many openings on these boards for those who wish to participate. This spirit of positive public-spiritedness was in marked contrast to events at the national level. Around the same time as the events above, witnesses observed one congressman elbow another in the back. At a committee meeting, a senator started to get out of his seat to challenge a witness to a fistfight. For years, we have seen national politicians verbally attack each other. It should not surprise us that verbal altercations would lead to acts of violence. It is especially disappointing, though, as these elected officials get paid considerably more compared to local officials. Their salaries are supported by all, including those who vote against them. They govern on behalf of all, even those who vote against them. The contempt and violence will only increase until leaders rein themselves in or the people demand an end to it. Political rhetoric has gone from considering opponents as being misguided to being treasonous or even vermin. Describing opponents in dehumanizing terms has historically been a pathway to violence and conflict. I remember how the city of Sarajevo went from hosting the Winter Olympics to being besieged in 8 years. We are not at that point, nor is it inevitable. We can choose to tone down the rancor or choose to feed it. A former Israeli paratrooper made a relevant comment at a recent presentation in Sioux City. He was asked why Hamas launched their barbaric, indiscriminate attack when they did. One contributing factor he cited was the polarization in Israeli society that made it appear it was too fractured to respond. The citizens who sought local office set a powerful example of issue-based campaigns designed with the intent to govern. It would be beneficial for federal candidates and office holders to follow their examples. Now move to a story about the library, Sioux City Library. Elf's Library highlights cookbooks and recipes. Sarah Enright hopes her latest local history display will inspire visitors to Elf's downtown library to rediscover an old favorite recipe or start a new family tradition. Enright, a local history librarian specialist, scoured dozens of cookbooks from the library stacks. The cookbooks were produced by local businesses and agencies, including Central High School's Castle Cookbook, Honey Magic recipes from Sue B. Honey, and a collection of favorite recipes from Palmer Candy. Enright selected recipes that are unique to Sioux City, as well as favorites of area families. The display, which is located on the library's second floor, includes recipes for everything from appetizers to soups to cookies. Food and holidays are the perfect combination, and we have just so many of these cool old cookbooks. They're really recipes from the community, Enright said. I tried to pick mostly businesses that were kind of nostalgic so that people could reminisce. Visitors can snap a photo of the recipes on display or write the ingredients and instructions down on recipe cards provided by the library. People take pictures and use Pinterest a lot now. I made a bunch of these blank cards if someone wants to fill them out. Just something for fun, said Enright, who said the display will likely stay up until the first week in January. I love it when people come in and are nostalgic. They're like, oh, I worked at Western Hills AEA. I contributed this, or my mom. I just love to hear the stories. And they do have some recipes on the page, but I'm not going to read them all. But just to give you an idea, it's ginger cookies, hot mulled cider, Charlie Boys, hot artichoke dip, Reuben pie, and tasty dip. And now for a business story, Hard Rock revenues dip in October. Revenues at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino dipped very slightly in October compared to September. The casino pulled in a little less than $7.44 million in adjusted gross revenues in October, according to a monthly revenue report from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. In September, the casino hauled in more than $7.5 million. The casino's revenues have been largely stable over the past several months, with a peak in July of $7.77 million and a low in August of $7.35 million. The City of Sioux City and Woodbury County each received $35,930 in taxes from the Hard Rock during October, while the state received just under $1.44 million. Earlier this month, the Hard Rock announced its digital sports book, Hard Rock Sportsbook Iowa, would be shut down. The last day to place a wager via the sportsbook's website and app is November 28th, and the website and app will be taken offline 1 month later on December 28th. The Hard Rock's internet sports wagering receipts were in the red in October and in September. In September, the Hard Rock posted a $31,857.25 loss on internet sports gambling. In October, the casino lost $43,017.38 on internet sports bets, according to the IRGC. The Hard Rock was the only casino in the state to lose money on online sports gambling during these months. As is the case at other casinos in the state, penny slots were the Hard Rock's top revenue getter in October. Gamblers put more than $50.85 million into these machines in October, and the casino earned just over $5.6 million in revenue from them. The casino has 666 slot machines, ranging from penny slots to $25 machines and 19 table games. Blackjack was the casino's top earning table game, with a table drop of nearly $1.66 million and revenues of $273,627. And we will finish today with a letter from Dear Abby. My husband never wears his wedding ring. In fact, he wears jewelry only when going out. I've brought this to his attention many times over the years. Most recently, I noticed he donned all his going out jewelry with another ring on his right ring finger. It's as if he consciously chose to wear all the jewelry except the wedding ring. I've noticed this many times and have questioned it. His answer is always, I can't wear it with what I do for a living. Abby, he works in an office by day and drives a boat in his spare time. Please help me clarify this. Signed, Incomprehensible in New Jersey. And Abby responds, I'll try. If I had to guess, this is happening because your husband does not want to be easily recognized as married. And this does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal. I'm Dagna, your reader. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening.